It's Ephraim, the younger, gives Manasseh a promise that they will be a great nation. Once he said that, Manasseh's got to be a great nation, or God's not in control. Ephraim, the younger, is given a promise. They'll push the people to the ends of the world. They'll become a powerful nation. They will become a multitude like the stars in the sand, and will become, in literal meaning, a commonwealth or community of nations. Now, they're sitting down there in Egypt, and God lays this promise down. I mean, that's a pretty tall order. Then he starts dispensing the birthright. He takes all the promises of God that have flown from Abram, literally from Shem through Abram, Isaac, Jacob, and he takes out of the pot called birthright, which is all those promises. You got to get this as I put it on, you know. I have a way of weeding out the unintelligent with the way I write on the board. It takes a genius to follow me. All that God had said is now funneled, and he pulls out of the funnel and says to Judah, Judah gets two things, scepter, lawmaking. Now here's God sitting up there with descendants of Ham, descendants of Japheth, descendants of Shem. He's drawn all of his promises into a tight funnel, and he lays out the future of the world from the perspective of the descendants of Jacob, who now has his name changed as he wrestled that night to Israel. The descendants of Israel, each of them get separate promises, but the birthright that comes from Abram, Isaac, and Jacob, as it didn't go to Ishmael, he now divides it up. He gives to Judah two things. Judah will get the scepter. A descendant of Judah will rule over the descendants of Israel. A descendant of Judah will fulfill the function of lawmaking. That's all. It's all Judah gets. That's it. And the birthright goes to Joseph, his two sons Ephraim and Manasseh. Now the birthright included all of those promises. You'll have descendants like the sand of the sea. You'll have descendants like the stars of the heavens. Your descendants will become mighty nation, commonwealth of nations. The birthright included, you will push the peoples to the ends of the earth, a great and powerful nation, defeating other nations. All of that's in the birthright. Tom Paine lost his faith because he said, God did not do for the Jew what he said he would do. The confusion was the confusion the church has laid on people traditionally for years, that all the promises of Abraham went to the Jew. Now I need to lay some vocabulary on you. Abram wasn't a Jew. Isaac wasn't a Jew. Jacob wasn't a Jew. He wasn't a Jew when he became Israel. He was an Israelite. Well, no, he was Israel. His kids were Israelites. Joseph wasn't a Jew. He was an Israelite. You search the Bible with a fine-tooth comb. The Jew was never called a Jew until after Solomon died, and in the years of Rehoboam, the two kingdoms divided. The 10-tribe kingdom under Jeroboam was formed to the north and called the House of Israel. The 2-tribe kingdom, Benjamin, which had the territory including Jerusalem because David had moved the capital from Hebron to Jerusalem, those two tribes, Benjamin and Judah, became the House of Judah kingdom. The Levites, who served in the temple, became the third additive because the temple was at Jerusalem. It wasn't until those two kingdoms separated, Judah and Israel, that Israel went to war in an alliance with Syria against Judah. And in that war between the 10-tribe kingdom allied with Syria against the 2-tribe kingdom Judah, as they came to war for the first time in the Bible, they talk of these Israelites killing the Jew. Jew is but a contraction of Judahites. The Jew never came into being as a generic, identifiable people until the southern kingdom of Judah was formed. All Jews are Israelites. Not all Israelites are Jews. If we were to generically spread it to the point of error, all Americans, this will be error, but you'll get the point, might be characterized as Celtic or Anglo-Saxon. But not all Celtic Anglo-Saxon people are Americans. Until that point is understood, you can never understand it in the Bible. 1 Chronicles 5 says, the scepter is Judah's, but the birthright is Joseph's. Jacob gave the birthright, and all that had flowed that God said he would do for this people went to Joseph, with only two exceptions. Now, they came out of Egypt together. They looked like one people. They marched into the promised land together. They looked like one people. They asked for a king and got Saul. He was of the tribe of Benjamin. Right off the bat, they violated God's promise that the scepter belongs to Judah. God sent a prophet out to anoint David, descendant of Judah. David was able to unite the kingdom. But you get a hint in Scripture that they were two separate peoples, because for 6 to 7 years after the death of Saul, his son, Ishbosheth, ruled over Israel. David only ruled over Judah. Ultimately, David is able to unite them. And the kingdom spreads from the Euphrates to the Nile. He's sitting in his throne room, ruling all of Palestine. All the territory marked out by Abram is now his. God has kept his word. And the prophet Nathan comes and says to him, God speaking, I took thee from the sheepcot, from following the sheep, to be ruler over my people Israel. I was with thee whithersoever thou wentest, cut off all thine enemies out of thine sight, made of thee a name like unto the names of the great men in the earth. Now I'm going to do something else. I'm going to make a dynasty out of you. Boy, that's sticking his neck out. I'm going to make thy son and his descendants a dynasty. You see, I'm a hard head. If God doesn't do what he says, every so often I think I got him. You know, I got some promise and he doesn't come through. And I say, damn it, I got a lot of sinning left in me, to hell with this mess. And before I get out the door, he comes through. He lucks out. And I'm right back in here having to say, he does it. It's like there's 114,000 today. I hope he doesn't give it to me so I can say, there you go. The heck with you. You know, I'm pushing it to a parody. God says, I'm going to make a dynasty. Am I boring you? I only got about 10 more minutes because the sermon, the introduction's long. The sermon's right to the point. Just hold on. He said, go outside. Oh, boy, this really lays it on the line. You look up at the stars, you look up the sky. As long as there's a sun out there shining, and as long as there's a moon and stars in the sky, one of your descendants, David, will be ruling as king over Israel. Boy, that's a tall order. I mean, I asked the evangelical church world, is the sun still shining? It was when I came in here. Was there a moon? We're even seeing Mars and Venus now. They're still there. Where is David's descendant ruling over Israel? Huh? If he isn't, to hell with his Christianity stuff. I mean, you know, big talk, God, but you can't produce. I'm going to look out for myself. But if I can find a descendant of David ruling over Israel in this 20th century and can plot the tracking that God did it every generation. Wait a minute. Now, David was in Palestine. He said a second thing. In addition to the fact your descendants will be a dynasty, and as long as there's a sun in the heaven and a moon in the sky, they'll rule over Israel. Furthermore, I'm going to give Israel a place of their own. Well, they already got a place. Another place. They rule from the Euphrates to the Nile. But Israel is promised another place. And he says, you will dwell in that place and not be harassed by your former enemies anymore. The former enemies were Amalekites, Philistines, Jebusites, Canaanites. It's got to be far away from that place, and their history will show they're not harassed by the descendants of Ishmael, by the descendants of Esau, by the Edomites, the Moabites, by the Canaanites. That's a tall order. How's he going to do it? Well, Ezekiel gives us a glimpse. The Jews have been carried into bondage. Ezekiel gets the prophecy. 23rd chapter, another one of those shocking chapters. Two sisters, Aholibamah and Aholah. It's X-rated. He says all they did was learn how to ding around down in Egypt. He says it worse than I said. I cleaned his act up. Two sisters, super dingers. Whores in Egypt. I mean, all of these important passages, God's so earthy, you can't preach on them. And God says they were two sisters there. He always viewed them as two separate people. From the moment that Jacob gave the promise and split the birthright, Judah and Israel, all the other tribes ruled over by Joseph, or led by him, separated. He saw them as two sisters when they were in Egypt. Even though they looked like they were together, they were viewed by God as separate because God had separated the birthright. And at the death of Solomon and the beginning of Rehoboam's reign, when the very first time the government tried to subpoena my preaching tapes, I started writing like that. I figured they'd put four or five of them in an asylum. Now listen to me. God sent a prophet out, you remember, to Jeroboam, who was of the house of Joseph, who was a ruler in the court of Solomon. Remember that story? This young man dressed in a brand new suit went out in the field. And Ahijah the prophet sought him out in the field. And I still say the spice has gone out of preaching today. This preacher found that kid and they were alone in his brand new suit and just ripped his clothes off. And there he stands naked as a jaybird with the prophet looking at him saying, rip, 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 rip. And he ripped that into 12 parts and gave him 10, kept two, and said, God is going to divide the kingdom of David after Solomon dies and give you 10 of them. When Solomon heard it, he went bananas. Jeroboam had to flee to Egypt. God had a problem. He worked it out. You read the history. Jeroboam came back at the death of Solomon, made a plea to Rehoboam that he had eased the taxing pressure, an old problem. And Rehoboam says, if you think Solomon was tough on you, wait till I get done. And Jeroboam sent the message to your tents, O Israel. War broke out, and the 10-tribe kingdom broke away from the kingdom to the south, And for 200 years, they were separate. And God sent a prophet named Hosea. That's the whole point. Hosea was not a prophet to the Jew. You'll never understand the Bible until you understand this division between the Israelites and the Jew. God sent Hosea to teach a message to Israel. He said, they won't listen to me any other way. I got to get their attention. Now, of course, the church today won't let God get your attention. I mean, if you're not a three-piece suit penguin out saying, God, and dispelling all these weirdo, woo-woo-woo, spiritual feelings, if you don't keep your message so far out it bothers nobody, you can't preach. God's a shocker. He says, they won't listen to me. Go marry that whore, that'll get their attention. And let that shock tell them, that's the way I feel about what they've been doing to me. Their departure from my word and their heathen worship and their faithlessness to my promises is like a faithless wife. So you play the part of me, Hosea, and get their attention by marrying a whore. It'll shock them. And then tell them, that's exactly the relationship that I, God, have with you, you faithless people. Then have kids. And as you name them, I, God, whose word never fails, will prophesy by the name. Jezreel means scattered. I'm going to scatter you. The second child means I will not have mercy on you. The third child, Lo Ammi, means you will become known as not my people. You're going to be scattered, be characterized as not having mercy, be characterized as not my people. Yet, last verse of the chapter, Hosea 1, yet, in the place that you're scattered, though you will be characterized as not having mercy and not my people in the place that you're scattered, you're going to become a multitude as numerous as the sand of the sea. Because God had his promise. They didn't have to be faithful people to be sand and stars. It wasn't the Jew that got that birthright promise. It was the house of Israel. I've got to keep my word. You have the birthright. You are the birthright people, Israel. But I'm going to scatter you. You'll become known as not my people. And you will become known as not having my mercy. 200 years after the separation of the kingdoms. 721 B.C. is the anchor date, but it started earlier because the half-tribe of Manasseh was carried into bondage. Assyria carried the north tribes into bondage. Settled them in the border where Iran now is. The Assyrian kingdom had the policy of uprooting people, resettling them on troubled borders. They were settled south of the Caspian Sea on the border of the Medes, which is Iran today. Darius at the Behistun Rock records, within 50 years, they became mercenaries joining in the rebellion of the Medes that broke the back of the Assyrian Empire and created the vacuum into which the Nebuchadnezzar Babylonian Empire would grow up. Nebuchadnezzar was allowed to grow because Cyrus of the Persians around the the Persian Gulf was attacking the Medes on their tail and uniting the Medo-Persian Empire that would ultimately conquer Babylon. But between the breakdown of the Assyrian Empire and the rise of the Medo-Persian, the Babylonian Empire rose up. Vital instruments in that breakdown of Assyria were this 3 to 5 million northern tribesmen called the House of Israel, resettled south of the Caspian Sea, who joined in rebellion. 100 years later, the Jew was carried into bondage. Assyria took, in one record, 246,000 Jews from the towns surrounding Jerusalem. Nebuchadnezzar from Babylon conquered Jerusalem, carries the Jew into bondage in Babylon for 70 years. some of the feast days. Study your own literature, Jewish people. Not all your present feast days come out of Leviticus. Some of them were adaptations out of Babylonian bondage. 70 years later, as prophesied by Jeremiah, under the leadership of Ezra and Nehemiah, Zerubbabel and Joshua, the Jew returns from Babylon, rebuilds the temple, called the Second Temple, rebuilds the city, and it's at that point, Daniel 11, where I was last Sunday, will pick up. And it is that temple repaired by Herod, that is the temple into which Jesus walks in Luke 4 to read from Isaiah on the feast day of the tabernacles. And it is those returnees with remnants of every tribe that reestablish the kingdom at Jerusalem, or rather, yes, at Jerusalem, under Nehemiah and a remote descendant of David, Zerubbabel. And the kingdom at the time of Christ is headed by an Edomianite, a descendant of Esau, the Edomites that have been grafted into Judah, and is sitting on the throne at the time Jesus comes. What about these lost tribes? They got the promise. They were given a promise of a place. They were given the promise that a descendant of David would rule over them. What about them? Carried into Assyria. Second Esdras records. They received a message to come back. They took counsel among themselves and decided no. And Esdras records, with much noise and thunderings because of the multitude, for a year and a half, they passed through the headwaters of the Euphrates River, the Caucasus Mountains, mind you, to a place called Arsareth, which means either house or city of Sereth, north of the Black Sea. Look at your calendar. They showed up exactly north of, they disappeared rather, exactly north of the Caucasus Mountains, about 685 to 670 B.C. Now in the 1870s, they began to dig at Hallstatt and Latin in Austria and Switzerland. And the Greco-Roman dominance peddled on us by German historians of world culture was broken. And suddenly it was discovered that what the Greeks called barbarian were barbarian, and what the Romans called barbarian were barbarian, because they were different and viewed thus by the Romans. To the Celts, what went on in the Colosseum and Maximus Circus was barbaric. And Celtic culture suddenly begins to unfold. And one of the great mysteries since about 1860, where did the Celts come from? They can be traced back until about a decade ago to north of the Black Sea. A great multitude just, boom, appear out of nowhere. You can't trace them as you can the Mongols and the Slavs to northern Asia. From nowhere, they appear. When do they appear? The break of the 8th century into the 7th century B.C. Exactly the time, exactly the place, that the Israelites, 3 to 5 million of them, pierced the Caucasus Mountains to disappear north of the Black Sea, out of nowhere, the Celts appear. Now, they either had one hell of a collision, or they're the same people. Now, don't give me that a Jew wears a beanie, got curly hair, goes to synagogue, and carries a money bag. Nobody knows what a Jew looks like. David was ruddy and fair. Sarah was blonde. The word is blonde and beautiful. Nobody knows what they look like. These Israelites, separated from the Jew, for 200 years, carried into bondage in Assyria, rebelling with the Medes and helping to overthrow the Assyrians. That's all history. We just didn't know what their name was until lawyer dug at Nineveh and found out that they had named these captives after their sixth king, Umri, and instead of calling them Israelites, they called them Beit Kumri. And the Persians, instead of calling them Israelites, called them Saki or Sakasuni. dropping the vow, Isaac's sons, Sakasuni, beat Cymri. The Welsh still call themselves Cymri. These Celts are none other than those 10 tribes. Now, God had said they must have a place. And in this Hosea passage, the prophecy was, scatter them. Become recognized as not my people, not having mercy. The problem of looking for the lost tribes is they've looked for Jews, I'd say, with beanies and with Talmuds and with scrolls and with money bags and with synagogues and curly hair and big noses. These Israelites disappeared north of the Caucasus Mountain, and bang, out of nowhere, the Celts appear. In wave after wave, tribal waves, if you will, they go across northwest Europe. Now, that strange passage, and I'm done. People wonder why God put it in the Bible. Judah gives a raw deal to his daughter-in-law. His wife died, and he comforted himself. Went to see an old sheep herding friend. His daughter-in-law Tamar, who knew his habits, dressed like a whore and parked herself by the roadside. Judah comes by and there she is. And you know, one of the greatest lines I've ever heard. Go to, I pray thee, let me come in unto thee. And she says, pay. He says, try credit. She says, no. Signet, staff, and Bank AmeriCard. He goes on shearing sheep. She's pregnant. After a while, he hears his daughter-in-law's pregnant. Dirty old pup. Stone her, he says. She says, whose are these? Mine. She had twins. They wrestled in the womb. Out came an arm. The midwife tried to tie a scarlet thread around it. The arm went back in. Out came a child without the scarlet thread, and she named his name Pharaoh's breech. Then the one with the scarlet thread came out, named Zara, that means seed. And war was engendered. The sons of Judah, to whom the promised birthright came. I may never go this long again, but I want the full gestalt to hit you. The sons of Judah were promised rulership, crown, and lawmaking. But now there's a fight. Who was the firstborn under the law of primogeniture? And unlike Jacob and Esau, God didn't make a determination. Zara claimed it because the hand came out first. Pharaoh's claimed it because he was full-born first. They're in Egypt. Joseph became the ruler of Egypt, the second wave of Hyksos. Settled his brethren in the best part of the land. The last chapter of Genesis says he owned all the property, all the cattle, all the money, and all the people, moved them around like chessmen. His brethren became the rulers until a pharaoh in Upper Egypt cast them out. They were not in bondage in Egypt 400 years. They came into bondage about a 50 to 100 year period before Moses was born, when the Upper Egypt Pharaoh drove them out. They ruled in Egypt. And in that struggle, the Hyksos, foreign rulers, second wave of them, ruling over Egypt, had a problem. Who, as a descendant of Judah, had the right to the scepter? Pharaohs? Zara. There were two exoduses out of Egypt. You've got to go to classical literature. All of it unfolded in the late 1800s. The Odorous of Sicily says two exoduses came out of Egypt. The rulers left by sea. Later, the people left with Moses. As is always the case, when rough rulers are overthrown, the rulers escape, the people stay and suffer. All of Israel was put into bondage. They're going to go out with Moses as we follow them. But ahead of them, a band of rulers of the Zara line, descendants of Judah left by ship. Dardanus founded Troy. Chalcol, son of Zara, founded Athens. It's tribes of Israel fighting. The apocryphal books of Maccabees have the Spartans and their descendants recognizing that they're brethren. This war was the descendants of Zorro. Some of them went to Spain. Why do you think it's called the Iberian Peninsula? From Ibiru. Where do you think Zaragoza got its name? These descendants of Zara became the Milesians, from which we get the word militia, warlike. They settled in Spain. They founded Troy. They founded Athens. The great fight that was called a myth until Schliemann dug up Troy. Produced the descendant of Dardanus, Brutus, who fled with his father to Italy, killed his father in a hunting accident, as recorded and carried forward in Geoffrey of Monmouth. Again, myth. Well, Homer was myth till Schliemann dug. Brutus, back to Troy, leads a rebellion against the Athenian conquerors. Wins sufficiently that the Athens king gives him a fleet of ships. He sails, and Geoffrey of Monmouth records it, he sails through the Mediterranean, stops off in Spain, goes on to settle in Britain. I can take you on a tour to Totnes, where he landed, and founded the kingdom of Britain. And your history books will tell you the first name of London was New Troy, as he founded a new Troy, subsequently to be called London. Brutus, brute, means covenant. Britain, covenant land. British, Hebrew roots, covenant man. And the kingdom of Britain is founded by a descendant of Judah. All the time that this is developing, the 10 tribes have gone to bondage in Assyria, pierced the Caucasus Mountains, and in wave after wave are coming across Northwest Europe to ultimately congregate in Brittany, Ireland, Wales, Scotland, and Britain. Now, the descendants of David, ruling over the Jew, are reduced down to Zedekiah, as Nebuchadnezzar puts him as a puppet on the throne in Jerusalem. He makes an alliance with Egypt. Jeremiah prophesies what will happen to him. Nebuchadnezzar comes, destroys Jerusalem, slays the sons of Zedekiah in front of him, plucks out Zedekiah's eyes, and takes him to die in Babylon. And the male line of the David Pharaoh's rulership, promised the scepter, is gone. The sun's still shining. Nebuchadnezzar's wiped out David's descendants, he thinks. But back in Deuteronomy, God through Moses established the law that when the male heir is gone, the female inherits. The daughters of Zedekiah were a relative of Jeremiah. God gives them to Jeremiah as his ward. The latter chapters of Jeremiah have Jeremiah and his servant Baruch and these daughters of Zedekiah down to Egypt. Sir Flanders Petrie found the place where Tiatephi, this daughter of Zedekiah, was found. They come back after the rest of the Jews are destroyed in Egypt and disappear. 583 B.C. Within 5 years. 5 years of 583 B.C. An old man with a servant named Breck and the daughter of a king shows up in Ireland with a stone called Leofail. Spell it backwards or forwards. L-I-A-F-A-I-L. It means the same. Stone of destiny. Exacts from the High King of Ireland. Who's he? Zara descendants in Spain, the Milesians, ahead of time had gone up and conquered the Tuatha de Danann, which means nothing but the tribe of Dan, and had set up the kingship of the Milesian kings in Ireland. This old man arrives in Ireland within 5 years of his disappearance in Israel and exacts from the king a dowry in return for the daughter of Zedekiah. He is to make Tara the head. He is to have the right to write the laws of Ireland. And they have three great feasts, now called fairs in Ireland. Only one other place in the world they have three feasts a year. where all the population comes to a central place. That's in ancient Israel, where they went on Passover, Pentecost, Atonement, and Tabernacles combined as the third one. He established three great feast days, writes the law at Tara, from which flows the law that forms the root of common law in England, which forms the basis of law in America. And now Jeremiah arrives with the daughter of Zedekiah, and she is wed to a son of Zarah, and the Judah line that went through Pharaoh's to Zedekiah to his daughters, and the Judah line that went through Zarah, through Dardanus and Chalcol, and through the Miletians, now to rule over the high king of Ireland, ruling over the residual elements of the cells settling in the British Isles, are brought together. Now that's 70 league boots. Longer than I intended. Why the anomaly? Why the anomaly? The British king today. I mean, this modern world's not prone to respect kings. Why this anomaly? Why even our liberal press salivate when the king or queen of England comes by? What is this mystery? Now, Ezekiel 17 had a parable that told that Nebuchadnezzar would come, and Egypt would come, and the kingdom of Zedekiah would be destroyed. Then he says God is going to do something. He's going to lop off of the top of the cedar of Lebanon, which in the parable was the house of David, and take a tender twig. That's what Ezekiel 17 says, and it's in the feminine in Hebrew. And transport that tender twig to the high mountain of Israel. He's in figure. A tree is not a tree, it's a kingdom. A mountain is not a mountain, it's a people. What Ezekiel 17 says, God would take, as the tender twigs male were taken by Nebuchadnezzar and destroyed. Ezekiel 17 has God, and everybody can date when Ezekiel was prophesying. He would take a tender feminine twig and transport it to the high mountain of Israel. And the high, Zedekiah, would come down, and the low, descendant of Zarah, would come up. And then three chapters later, concerning Zedekiah, God said, I will overturn of the kingship of David, I will overturn, and then won't overturn it anymore until he comes whose right it is to reign. Overturn one, Zedekiah, to the high kings of Ireland. Overturn two, Fergus conquers Ireland, moves the stone of Scone or Leofail to Scotland. Overturn three, the Stuarts take it from Scotland to England. They knew there was no way they could get Scotland to accept the rulership of kings of England without that stone on which they were crowned. Overturn number three, Jeremiah brought it. What is that stone? Go through Judges. They crowned every single king on that rock. They carried that rock down to Egypt. When Jacob made his pillow that night, and down came the word of God, he anointed a stone and says, this is Bethel. He anointed a place, he anointed a stone, the house of God. God brought him back to it and honored it and said, you obey me, I'll bless you. That stone in the blessing to Joseph in Genesis 49 is given to Joseph. That stone was carried through the wilderness. That stone became the coronation stone. You find it in Joshua's, you find it in Judges. Now, everybody goes to Westminster Abbey. I can't believe the brains of some people. They go to a modern world, they look at a coronation chair, and underneath it is a rock. And the ugliest rock you ever saw. Big old crack in it. And those modern, intelligent Britons say, that's the stone of Jacob. Jacob's pillar. When Hitler was about to descend on Britain, they hid that stone, one of the great secrets of the war, and sent the document secretly to Canada, where it would be hidden, because they knew if Hitler, who had a passion for religious relics, could get that stone, the authority in the emotions of the British people for the king was gone. That's an anomaly in the modern world. This British throne, when Charles is crowned, he'll sit on that chair with that rock underneath. It's got a big crack in it. Iron rings on each side. They didn't wear, look at the wear and tear when you go with me on a tour. They didn't wear those rings out, taking it from Ireland to Scotland to Westminster Abbey. The wear and tear on those iron rings is from miles and years of carrying it. Olamfala, otherwise known as Jeremiah, brought it to Ireland, crowned the High King of Ireland. Fergus, I repeat, took it to Scotland, crowned the kings of Scotland. Britain took it to Westminster Abbey. Every king is being crowned there. And God's word in Ezekiel says, I will overturn, and then no more. Until he comes. Now, who's your choice? You're not going to find the lost tribes by an oasis, picking their nose. They're a multitude. They got to be a people as large as the Celts, the Slavs, the Blacks, the Russians, the Chinese. It's a mass of people. God said they would become known as not his people. Amos said he'd lead them through a wilderness and wouldn't lose a grain. The Celts, I'll take the world on. Who's your candidate? The last decade, they've traced the Celts a bit deeper. They trace them now south of the Caucasus to around the Caspian Sea. That's what I said. They're the lost tribes. Now the promises to Israel are true. Multitudinous kings. Who's the greatest empire in the world? Commonwealth of nations. Who possesses the gates of their enemies? Until a grinning Baptist gave it away. Gibraltar, Taiwan, Formosa, Panama. They hate it. I'm telling you, folks, these scaremongers tell you Russia's coming down every day. The Israelites are never going to be destroyed. That British Commonwealth of Nations is the third transfer of the throne, and I'm telling you, I'll lose my faith if I'm not right. God is keeping his word. That British crown will not be overthrown until he comes, whose right it is to reign. Even that old scrawny admiral said to Winston Churchill, when they issued an order during the war that you had to be a certain height to be a soldier, he says, we're so stupid, we have to be the lost tribes. Only God's making us win. I am tired of people putting America down. We are not going to be defeated by those beanheads in Russia. We will not be defeated. Another word and I'm done. One other word. The United States is Manasseh. You trace the tribe of Manasseh through the Angli and you'll find the Puritans came right out of where the Angli settled. The promise to be a great nation. Now the final little knot. Ezekiel 37. Take two sticks, God said to Ezekiel. This is what's going to happen in the last days. Take a stick and write Joseph on it. Take a stick and write Judah on it. Put them together. And when the people say to you, what's this mean? Say, Judah and Israel will come together. And what does the word say? Judah, when the time comes to return to their homeland, will walk to Israel and together they go back to that promised land. And what did Hosea say? In the place that you're scattered, though you're known as not my people, and though you're known as not having mercy, you not only will become a great people, but in the place that you've been scattered to, you will become known as the sons of God. Like a beeline, Joseph of Arimathea went to Britain, and the first church above ground was the church at Glastonbury. Not Rome, Britain was the first church. That's history, my friends. Read your church councils. The British bishops had the prime seat as the church of greatest antiquity. The very first place and the only place. The Irish church never came under Roman control, and without the Irish church, we would not have the manuscripts we have today. And they became known as the sons of God, and God, who chose an oracle people through Abram, who were supposed to take his word and carry it to the world. I'm sorry, I love the Jew, and I fight for their fulfillment of promise, but the Jew has not made the world aware of the Old Testament. British and American Bible societies, where'd it go? British and American Bible societies are responsible for making this the most read book in the world. In spite of what Satan and stupidness might accomplish, when God says it, it's going to happen. Now, this is one of the longest messages I've ever preached, but it all reduces down to this. If God can do that, take that mass of people, hide them, and bring them forth, send a king ahead of them to be there to rule, send these daughters and weave this fabric, I believe he can get my little problems under control. All I really, I only live. Keep the breath of eternal things on you. This God can take me not only through time, but into eternity. And this is the salvation that comes. If you'll trust him, I say to fathers, let me say it again, what do you want from your kid, perfection or trust? God longs for us to trust him. And to those of us that'll trust him, he will give us his salvation. If I can make any one of you in your circumstance get a fingernail grip on God's promise, you're sick, I'm the Lord that healeth thee. You don't know where to turn, the Lord is my shepherd. One day at a time is good enough. If you commit your life to him, my Bible says the steps of a good man are ordered to the Lord. If I got a mess tomorrow, it's his and my mess. He promised to lead me through it. Christianity is a simple, trusting relationship. You trust him, he'll take care of the other things. I've been criticized by my preacher friends as not being as pure as they think they are. One thing I'm glad of, nobody has ever criticized me for not having faith. Faith that looks up and says, a God that can do this can see me through an operating room. A God that can do this can see me through a bankruptcy. I mean, the worst that's happening is I got to start over. A God that can do this can see me past death's gate. You know what I say at a funeral? Paul called death starting point, getting on a ship that's just starting to sail. A God that can do this will keep his promise for this church. I'll build my church in the gates of hell, shall not prevail against it. A God that can do this will keep his promise in the loneliest hour. I'll never leave you nor forsake you. Promises begin to make sense when they're hung up against the backdrop of a performance like this. God is there with your father, Wes. All your father needs is the faith to say, I'm going to hang on. And he'll go out, either waking up to health eternal, because his last message was faith. God will see us through. Will you say it with me? Put the future in the past tense. We made it. Through. 1985. I'll preach half as long next Sunday. See you later.
God be for us. Who can be against us? Who can separate us from his mighty hand? If God be for us, who can be against us? We're going to win this battle, and for God we stand.
This has been Sunday at the King's House.